Right, Kathleen, welcome to the show. This is John, and we're doing a podcast called Indigenous Wisdom Matters, and I'm interviewing Kathleen Cavaney, who is a teacher for many years at Aotea College. So let's get straight into it. Would you tell us about your background in the education field?
Yes, I started teaching in 1986. In my first 5 years, I actually taught primary aged students, which are those from 5 to 12, but I taught at an intermediate, which is 11 and 12. And after 5 years, I switched and went secondary teaching. And I taught for 5 years at Sacred Heart College, which was a college I went to myself. And then for the last 20 plus years, I've been here in Porirua teaching, first at Bishop Viard College. And I was the head of maths there, and then I have shifted. For the last 12 years, I've been the deputy principal here at Aotea College.
Oh, very good. A lot of there. So how do you define culture?
I define culture as being many things, really. It's the it can be defined as your ethnicity. So the culture I identify with is Māori and also being a Kiwi. I know we have Irish ancestry, but I don't really identify with that part of myself because I'm here in New Zealand, I suppose. But also culture, I think, is things like your spirituality, your gender. So culturally, I'm a female, and that's very important to me in terms of being a feminist and being very aware of gender issues in the world. But as I often say to the students, they're all part of a student culture. For example, they have a very much a student culture around the language they use, given they text much more than I do, and they are, their conversations are very different from even what mine would have been as a secondary student. So they're a kind of, then you could be part of a sporting culture, so I see, or a fitness culture, and I see that culture has many hats.
Very good. Right, so you're a part Māori descent, Kathleen. Of Māori descent. What has been your own personal journey regarding your culture?
Well, if we're talking about my ethnicity and culture, then my journey there would be knowing I was Māori from a very young age, because I always had a very, I suntanned easily, I suppose, so I always looked a bit darker, as did you, and people always identified me as Māori, and I had dark eyes, dark hair, that kind of thing. So from a young age, I was aware that I was Māori, and when I grew up, I suppose in the late 60s, 70s, when I was maybe 10, it was kind of, could be seen as a negative or a positive. So there were places where we lived in Gisborne, for example, where there are many Māori people, where it was kind of a positive. And then I remember when we went to Napier and we went to kind of skate parks, it became a negative, as in you're one of the Māori kids. I suppose it's how you define yourself compared to others. I remember as a young person, Yvonne and I walking to school and being scared of the Māori kids down the road, not necessarily seeing that we were also Māori kids but up the road. So as I've grown into adulthood, I suppose I've become more comfortable with it, but also I've been in education, and in the time I've been teaching, there's been a very strong, in New Zealand anyway, a very strong claiming back your identity, and it's been a positive for me. And in the last 3-4 years, actually, I have been learning te reo, and that has been a very hard road, but it's been very good for my Māori identity. It's certainly made me a lot stronger to claim it, and also I've done quite a lot of research, which has been beneficial.
So how do your family members view their cultural heritage in comparison to you?
Well, there are 6 of us in terms of siblings, and in Māori words, there are two different things to describe the your own gender in terms of siblings. So tuakana are those who are older than you, so that I have one tuakana, that's Yvonne, and then I have three younger sisters who would be Taina and one brother John who's Tunane. So if I look at those three, they're kind of different definitions anyway, and Yvonne and I were kind of the oldest in the family and educated at a time when you couldn't learn Māori. Maybe we were closer to mum in age because we were older, and we really did, I feel our mother was kind of embarrassed of being Māori because of the time she grew up in, and I think Yvonne and I probably absorbed that a little bit. I think our brother was impacted differently, but he went to a college where he ended up getting a Māori scholarship to go on and do his apprenticeship rather for building. So at some point in his college life he was identified as Māori. And then there are three younger ones, and two of them were at college at a time when you could learn Māori and also were identified as Māori. And I remember Helen got the top Māori student at college. And then Claire was significantly younger, and there was such a difference in her education compared to ours in terms of Māori being kind of, there was a renaissance and people were very strong about you learning the language and being involved. And she did learn it at college and went on to do some of it at university, and I see that she kind of has been a little bit more happy to be using Māori words, making it part of her life, and that's been a positive for her, and I think has been a good impact on the family.
Very good. So how important is education in your family?
Well, it's very important in our family. We are the product of two parents who were great readers, and I think that was beneficial for all their children. Our mother was actually the ducks of her college. She went to St. Joseph's Māori Girls College, but she kind of always thought of herself, well, she once said to me that she only got it because everybody else had left, but I have done quite a lot of study at university, and I know that for a Māori woman to have stayed as long as Mum stayed right through to year 12, was very unusual at the time, so that highlights to me that she was a scholar, and she also went on to become a nurse, which was a profession, and very few Māori women at her in the 50s would have done that. So, and she was a very intelligent woman. And our father was a very intelligent man, but he also was at a time when men didn't really go to university. I think he probably should have and could have had he had a different background. But I grew up knowing that learning was good and education was important.
Very good. Well, you know, I perceive that cultural awareness has grown markedly within New Zealand over the last 20 years. What changes have you noticed in schools in this regard?
Well, I think schools are very much at the forefront of positive action. So in schools, for example, there is a real movement to encourage young people to learn te reo, for example. We, in any events, try to be culturally inclusive, try to be respectful to the tangata whenua. So, for example, here at our college, we are on Ngāti Toa land. So the school is currently under a new building phase, so there have been a lot of meetings and interactions the principals had to try and make sure that we are respectful to the iwi who actually own the land, and get input from them, things around naming of buildings and ensuring some of the signage and is kind of correct. For example, the school's wings are all, well, there are birds associated with the school, so working with the iwi, we've tried to ensure that the birds are native to this area and native to New Zealand. So that has meant a change in names. For example, one of our whānau groups is Mōhō, which is actually a South Island bird, so that has been changed in the new building to Kerridu, which is much more common here in Wellington. So little things like that. Do it, try and build your kapa haka group. And for myself as a deputy principal, I have oversight of assessment, and there's a real focus on ensuring that Māori students are achieving as well as they can and as well as any other ethnicity group, which is a real, it is one of the issues of education in New Zealand at the moment, that results are not the same by ethnicity.
Right. Mm. Well, was Māori culture incorporated in your own schooling?
When I think back to my primary school years, I can remember doing kind of social studies units around Māori knowledge, maybe, and I remember playing stick games. I remember some waiata from primary school, and I when I was a primary teacher myself, I remember thinking, oh, that whoever was at our school at that time was actually quite strong, because I didn't necessarily see it in other schools I went to. And now at the college, that's kind of standard in most colleges, that you will have a karakia or a waiata that is kind of represents the school, that you've got student leaders who are able to represent the school and porphyry, that kind of thing. So I do think it's stronger now than it was in my education. I don't remember it being very strong at secondary school, but I do remember in Wainui Mata having an influence on me. Yeah.
So from your perspective, what is the most commonly held misconception about Māori heritage?
Well, I remember growing up, and I think you as an interviewer asked me you defined me as part Māori, and I remember being called part Māori as I grew up. But that has really changed. We never describe somebody as part European or part Irish or part English. And I think today, if you are Māori, you are Māori. You know, it doesn't matter what part you are. And there was a time when the government defined you as a fraction, but that's definitely changed. So one of the misconceptions, I think, is that you have to be a specific percentage or fraction of your ethnicity before you can claim to be Māori. But that's definitely not so for the government and for many people. I think one of the misconceptions today, I think there's kind of with this renaissance, there's a bit of an issue with kind of young people in their 30s who are Māori, came through at a kind of a very positive time and are possibly strong in te reo. And I kind of perceive this idea that you're more Māori if you can speak the language than if you can't, and that in no way either credits in no way acknowledges the reason some people can't. For example, our uncle, who's in his 80s, doesn't speak it at all and feels very kind of embarrassed for that, and is a kaumātua for the iwi. But he's a product of his time where he was not able to speak it, where he lost his mother, who was the speaker of the language, and so grew up unable to access that side. So to say you're not Māori if you can't speak it is a big misconception, in my opinion.
Yes, I've heard people call them potato Māoris.
Yes, and I think there have been some political people called like that. Winston Peters, I've heard him referred to like that. White on the inside, brown on the outside. So those kind of things. There are lots of misconceptions in education. There's kind of the misconception that Māori students can't do as well as non-Māori, but I know as a Māori person myself with a master's that we have the same level of intelligence, so the results are nothing to do with intelligence, I don't think.
Mm. Well, have you experienced racism, and in what form if you have?
Yes, I would say I've experienced racism in the form of, as I was growing up, people saying, teasing you because you're part Māori, or making out that in some way it was a deficit. But overt, in-your-face racism, possibly I have not. I think my brother probably more so, when I think of him as a young man being pulled over by the police, probably more because he looked Māori than a non-Māori young man might have been. Yeah, so I suppose I've been in education, which is a positive area. I think if you work in some other areas, perhaps you would experience it more. But I think there's lots of casual racism of all sorts in New Zealand, and so trying to be aware and addressing it is a positive. I think my mother's partner is a person who has, over the years, said lots of things that were casually racist, and those kind of things I try to address, and they annoy me. But directed at me, I wouldn't say so much. Mm. Having said that, I travelled overseas when I was in my 20s, and I remember going to Turkey and Greece, and the same happened when I was in Italy. And I think Yugoslavia, people presumed, because I kind of had a darker look, that I was actually, when I was in Turkey, Turkish, when I was in Greece, Greek. So those kind of perceiving what people are by the way they look, I think, is something that's quite common.
Well, what can be done about racism and prejudice, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think we have to call it out and address it. I think we're living in a time where we've got leaders who have created a world where they have made where their casual racism or their overt racism or sexism is not being addressed. For example, I believe that to be true of Donald Trump. I think in New Zealand that we're very lucky with our leader. I think she says she calls things out, and she is a good model of somebody who can work with multi-ethnic groups and can address and has tried to address racism in the light of the Christchurch incident. I think one of the big issues with racism across the world seems to me to be economic disparity. And so one of the things we could do to address racism worldwide would be to reduce economic disparity and reduce the haves and the have-nots. And if those countries that are really struggling were doing better, perhaps they wouldn't. I don't perceive that people want to leave their countries. So if we were to work to have a fairer, more economic, economic world, I think racism would reduce. And I think you just have to increase education, because that reduces. The more you know people, the more you understand, you're probably less racist. Travel, I think, is a great thing for reducing racism. The more you see the world.
That's right, I do too. So do you think young people today have a sense of culture?
I do. I have actually asked that question in my class, what culture do you think you are? It's kind of been a starter activity. And that's possibly a misconception too. Students who have an ethnicity, e.g. Māori or Pacifica or Asian, they kind of define themselves as their culture via that, whereas I have some students said who are, say, English or a New Zealand European, I don't have any culture, so that's probably not true either. We just have, so they think of culture in terms of colour.
Right, oh, okay. Well, how have your experiences helped you as a teacher in working with youth of different cultures?
Well, I've worked in Porirua for 20 years, which is one of the most ethnically diverse cities in the world. So I think, and also I'm a teacher of secondary school students, so I'm very used to young people, and I do perceive that for many people, young people are a bit scary, particularly those from 16 to 20. And so my experiences have made me more comfortable with young people and with many different ethnicities. I also have done my master's around narrative therapy and restorative practices, and in that work there's kind of a lot of I've learned a lot around discourse, which is the ideas that are present in society that we buy into or don't buy into. For example, the gender discourses, maybe, so even feminism. Is it easier to be a feminist in New Zealand or America than it is in Saudi Arabia, for example? So those kind of learning and thinking has helped me be able to ask young people questions or make them think or make myself think, try to fracture the glass is one of the terms where you don't always accept everything as it is.
Right. So what do you think are major cultural issues facing youth today?
Well, actually, I think depending where, I suppose, you were educated, for the young people at our school, even though they're in a multi-ethnic school, they don't necessarily have multi-ethnic groups of friends, so breaking down barriers would be one of those issues. But if you can see that in the workplace, then that carries on from your schooling. I think one of the issues for young people today in particular is kind of hope. I think with quite a lot of media attention around climate change and the catastrophe awaiting the world around climate change, if you're a young person, that's a hard message to take on, and you can kind of feel hopeless and think, what's the point? I think a lot of media is very focused on negativity, so wars, and we highlight things that are clickbait, like Donald Trump, so they get very mixed messages about what it is to be a good person in the world or what's acceptable in terms of standards. And I also think this whole, compared to when I grew up, say the gaming industry, which is kind of, I don't know it very well, but it's kind of, from somebody on the outside, it seems to be a bit violent. Does it make it violence? Does it normalise violence? I think that issues for young people. I definitely think the kind of way that social media is going means that, to use a Māori term, ka nohi te ka nohi, face-to-face conversations are much harder for young people than when I grew up, because it's easy to, we have a lot of problems in education around the use of social media to say mean things, to spread maliciousness, to be a bully, that kind of thing, because you're not having to deal with the person face-to-face, and I think that issues for the world.
That's right. Well, our young Indigenous students failing in the school system because it does not fulfil their cultural needs?
The New Zealand government has done quite a lot of work around this, and there are some PLD, professional learning development opportunities and focus that they've had for a long time around this, and there's plenty of research to say that if we include a young person's culture, then their outcomes will be better. So, for example, when a young person comes and they can see something of themselves either in the teachers, so you can see some teachers who look like them, or they look around the room and they can see, I don't know, some weavings or some poi or whatever it might be for a culture, that would make you comfortable. But I suppose we still have very much a Western knowledge base. So, for example, Matariki, which is the Māori New Year, has just happened, and there's no kind of science, not necessarily a science unit that's done on it as a matter of course. There are some teachers who make a real effort, but the New Zealand curriculum isn't based in with a Māori worldview. We still have our New Year in January because we're with the Western world.
Right. So who has been a major influence in how you approach your teaching role?
Well, I've worked in teaching for a long time, and I've worked with a lot of very good people. If I think back over my teaching time, I worked in my first school with a woman, Pat Johnston, who was a very strong woman and a good teacher, and I found her to be very fair and very professional, and she had a big impact on me. And then as I've gone through my own teaching, the people you work with that you get on with, so ones who become friends that I think of as good teachers, they always are part of your work. But also my university work, and I have worked more recently with a head of guidance who's got a PhD, and she's a very intelligent woman, and we have had quite a lot of conversations, and we've done a lot of work together, and our work has been to try and foster kind of relational practice within our school and with young people, and I have really benefited from working with them.
Well, that sounds interesting. Do you think cultural perspectives are given enough respect within the government, the media, or society?
I think in New Zealand we're possibly ahead of many areas in the world. I went to Canada for a conference, and there was absolutely no recognition at that conference of the Indigenous people, but that was in 2009, so maybe it's improved. I think that it's very clear that there's a difference in New Zealand because of the Treaty of Waitangi. It's in, you know, there's a legal piece of paper, and there have been many governments who have tried to address and redress the wrong. So I think we have... we're advantaged in that way. So, but I think that our society can do better. We still do not have enough Māori doctors, dentists, accountants, architects, but we have plenty of Māori cleaners and office workers, truck workers, people on the road. So it's about ensuring that our society reflects, everybody's reflected up the chain and across. Yeah.
So do you think we are failing in our duty to encourage cultural diversity within the education?
I don't think education is. I think it's one of the areas where we really are trying to make an effort. So there are some things that I think probably we need to be brave and do, like make today compulsory in schools. But I do know that the government hasn't pushed forward with that. And I know one of the issues would be there aren't actually enough teachers who could teach Te Reo to make it that you could have it compulsory. So I suppose one of the things the government, and they are committed to it, though I know it's part of their plan, but it's about how can we find ways to get more people speaking the language, to get Māori people who don't speak it to be able to speak it in their homes, to have old people, young people, little people being able to do it. So I, for example, am learning it through the Wānanga, which is a very good organisation, I think, but I have to do it on top of my daily work, so it's kind of, it's hard work and lots of people.
Well, how does the school you currently teach and address cultural aspects for its students?
Well, we do many of the things I've said. We have we've got quite a lot of professional learning where we're trying to get teachers to upskill in areas where maybe they can speak a bit of Te Reo, they understand the tikanga. They could play some Māori games, for example. They pronounce young people's names properly. And we have our principals actively look to employ people who are Māori. So we've been very lucky. We've got quite a few Māori staff, and we've got Māori teachers who can take kapahaka and... So all of that's a positive, and we have got a willing staff. So I think in terms of the school I'm in, we're moving forward and doing a good job, but we only have young people from 9 to 3:30. So a lot of your cultural intelligence also comes from your home. And so families is another thing that has to happen.
Right, okay. So do you have any particular strategies for working with Indigenous youth who may not be managing well in the classical school system?
Well, schools would have students who really are disengaged or don't quite fit in. In the New Zealand system, there are some alternative schools provided where there's a lower ratio. That doesn't work for everybody. We try to engage their families, and we've tried to respond with having a curriculum that meets student needs more. So, for example, I learned Shakespeare. Some schools still do it. But there are more up-to-date books now that engage, that's probably a bad example, and people who love Shakespeare would disagree. But there are kind of texts or topics that are of more relevance to young people now than the topics I did at school. So, for example, one of the English teachers is looking next year to talk to teach a paper around kind of the use of slang in films that, you know, the world of, what's that, World of People. It was a big New Zealand film, and it's got some classic lines out of it. So that's a very different film than Heart for the World of People compared to what I did at college, which was Othello. So, I suppose we're trying to have classrooms where young people can, where they're sitting there and thinking, I understand this, it connects with me, I want to learn more. But it's not easy.
Especially because I've seen more of it in film, you know, like Boy or, you know, even Cliff Curtis acting in The Dark Horseman, was it called?
Yeah, The Dark Horse.
So they are having more role models to look at like that too, which is good. So what advice do you give to parents with children who are sort of not doing well in those situations?
Well, as a teacher of many years and a mother myself, in the end your children... Most children will do well if they're supported by their parents. You give your children a big step up if you read to them as young ones. So those first few years where you're reading to your young children, reading with them, reading to them, all helps their reading later on. That to me is one of the keys, I suppose. Giving them experiences, taking them places, talking to them a lot is very good for young people's learning. Kind of being positive about learning, not buying into that I was dumb at math so I can't help you, or giving them permission not to do things because you couldn't do it. As a maths teacher, it's kind of a frustration I have.
Yeah.
And really, if you're a person who wants your children to do well, you have to be committed to giving them some time to, particularly I say as a secondary teacher, kind of you're very busy with your children when they're young and your hands come off a little bit as they get older, but actually from kind of 13 to 17 they need you more than you think they do, so being there
and supporting them as much as you can.
And quite recently I've had lots of conversations where I'm encouraging people to get young people to use whole sentences, to look me in the eye, to say I think this because, you know, I give them starters, and I think parents would help the world by ensuring that their young people can speak in full sentences and relate to people.
Right, yeah. In the education system, is there a place for cultural elders to offer their knowledge and perspective to students?
Well, there is, in that, but I suppose it would be how, you know, there's lots of parent groups, or there's always events at a school that you can get your, maybe your grandparents or your aunties and uncles involved. I don't know. I think some schools would be better at it than others. I know my niece, for example, but that was at primary school. They had a grandparents' day where you brought your grandparent to school. So I think things like that are great. And I have heard of other schools, we don't do it, but they have, say, a parent-child dinners or grandparent-child things. So... yeah, I think we could do better in that area, probably.
Yeah. So what's your favourite part of your teaching role?
I actually think young people, I enjoy young people. My role I'm often having to tell people off because I'm the DP, but when I'm in my classroom as a teacher as well, young people want to learn, they're open to things, the world's kind of their oyster, so they're not cynical, and you have so much capacity to make their outcomes positive. I like that about teaching.
Right, well, which activities within the mainstream education subjects or extracurriculum topics do you feel achieve the best results in supporting Indigenous youth?
Well, I suppose I don't know that I could really answer that one. I'm a maths teacher and I definitely know that to do well in NCA Level 1, you have to get numeracy. And so that's one of the building blocks, and literacy is another building block. Most young people do well keeping a science, so English, maths and science, through to, say, year 11, which is about 15. But I've seen lots of young people blossom when they do subjects they particularly love, like PE or digital technology, which is that kind of, if you were an architect and you were creating things. Creativity. I think what we're finding is if young people have a pathway or an idea of what they'd like to do, they're kind of are clearer about school, and I suppose helping young people think what is it they would like out of their life or the path they want to take makes them think more seriously about their subjects.
Right. Do you see any Māori cultural practices or activities that are accepted or integrated within the mainstream society?
Well, I suppose in the time I've been teaching, yes, I think that there's Māori students, but Pacifica students as well. One of the things that is thought is that working in a group is beneficial, and I think that's a practice that I, as a maths teacher, see in my classroom. I often encourage them to work in a group, be they Māori or not, because I think working in a group, sharing your knowledge, is going to help you. I'm not quite sure we've kept up with assessments, because you can assess in a group, but we probably do that less, and we still kind of default to individual assessments. So that would be one of the practices. I think if I think of what I like about what I embrace in Māori culture is kind of manaakitanga and care of others, and I think in any educational setting, if that's strong, your school's in a better place.
Right.
Yeah.
So what would you like to achieve in your own personal journey as a Māori woman?
Well, I'd like to learn to speak the language fluently. At the moment, I'm off to a Noho Marae, and I'm fine. I'm struggling because I probably don't have the time that I'd like to dedicate with it, but I'm a person who is quite determined to do things, so that would be one of my big aims.
Well, do you think te reo Māori should be a compulsory subject in schools?
Yeah, I talked about that. I can see that it should. I do understand that it would be difficult to make it so right now, because you would have to have a far greater number of teachers able to teach it than we've currently got.
Right. Well, how do we as a society become more culturally competent?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose we have to be open. We have to, some of the things I've talked about, we have to read, we have to educate ourselves and not just believe everything we see on the TV or read in the paper. Maybe have a diverse group of friends, not just everybody who's the same as me. We travel, we become more diverse.
I definitely think the amount that people see on TV really influences them, and if it's always negatively portrayed, then they're not willing to listen properly. But
yeah, so for example, I'm watching Netflix at the moment, and I get so sick of it being American focused. So I'm enjoying looking up the German ones or the Norwegian crime ones. You know, they just have a different way of thinking, and I enjoy having a broader perspective than just one cultural lens. So. I think.
So do you
being open to more than that, but how do you be open? It's trying to break some barriers and get to know your neighbours and not be scared of other people.
That's right. Well, do you actively participate in any cultural activities?
Yes, because I go to this Māori class once a week, and it's 3 hours, and then I have Noho Marae, and it involves karakia and karanga and learning the language. And beyond that, I haven't gone to any kapa haka groups. I feel like I find it hard to do two things at once, sing as well as dance. So, but yeah, that's what I do culturally.
So are the roles...
Try to be involved in the iwi, you know, through the keeping up with what they put online, but I haven't been to any of the wānangas, which my siblings have.
Right, okay. Are the roles of men and women specially defined in Māori culture? And if so, what are they?
Just want to open something over here. Yes, I think that that is one of the problems I have with Māori culture. They have got some very gender I have a problem with the gender roles. That is only, you know, the men and the porphyry speak and the women do the work. And so there are some issues that I think need to be broken down, the kind of barriers that have been created. I did go to a Wānanga, which is a meeting at our, for our iwi, and one young man said to me that lots of reading he's done, they didn't used to be quite so gender specific. So, yep, there's a problem there, in my opinion.
Right. So has the Treaty of Waitangi, or how has the Treaty of Waitangi influenced the education system?
Oh, I think it's had a strong influence, because one of the important parts of it is, well, there are three P's, participation being one of them. So there's a real need to get Māori families involved in participating in education. One of the other P's is power, and trying to get power sharing. So I think that's an aspect that schools try to address through their boards, trying to get representation. And then it's about trying to get a Māori voice, which is not as easy as that sounds.
That's right. So, well, do you have any antidotes where cultural misunderstandings may have happened at your school? Little funny things, something that, you know, I don't know,
you can think of. Otherwise, off the top of my head, no, I can't think of any that are funny. I think misunderstandings do happen all the time. But I think I've done a few myself. I look back now, and now that I know much more about porphyry, and I remember my second year of teaching trying to get this young woman to speak on behalf of the school and or the class, and now I realise that would have put her in an uncomfortable position, because she was a young woman and she wasn't allowed to. So little things like that.
Right.
But just off the top of my head, I can't think right now, but it's bound to have been some.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we start ending this interview, I'm going to give you 10 quick-fire questions, and they're one-word answers only, yes or no. Have you ever slept on a marae?
Yes.
Have you eaten a hangi?
Yes.
Can you count to 10 in Māori?
Yes.
Do you have any tattoos?
No.
Would you consider having a moku?
Moku kawa, yes.
Oh. Can you sing the national anthem in Māori?
Well, half of it.
Yes, that's about as far as I got too. Have you attended a tangi?
Yes.
Do you know what Matariki is?
Yes.
Have you seen the movie Utu?
Yes.
What did you think of it?
It was a bit... It was strong.
It was quite sad at the end, though.
Yeah.
Can you use the poi?
Yes, but not very well.
Okay.
And that's another one of my... I would love to be able to do the poi well. I have talked to the kids at school, and they make it look so easy, but I have tried, and it's not that easy.
Well, I know.
Yeah. So a lot more practice would be required.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen, for giving me this time to do this interview. And once it's up and on my podcast, Indigenous Wisdom Matters, I hope you'll be able to have a listen in and see how we all sounded.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ta.